Okay, I'm sitting here with my Zeta. Zeta is a Yiddish word for grandfather, is that correct?
Yes, sir, that is correct.
My Zeta was born in... Zeta, why don't you tell about it? You don't have to hold it, I got it.
I was born in South Philadelphia on June 24th, 1923. And I lived in a community where... all the activity was on a city street. There's no grass, two trees on that one street that had all row houses.
What street was it?
Second Street, 2500 South in Philadelphia. And the street had 50 row houses, 25 on each side of the street. And there were only two trees, and the trees were evidently planted at homes where the people were relatively well off compared to the rest of the people. So they were able to afford the planting of the two trees. Anyhow, we used to play on the street, and quite often we'd get bruised because we're trying to play like touch football, and there's no grass, so we got bruised from being thrown down against the tar streets. Anyhow, that's not too interesting. But I went to South Philadelphia High School and graduated in June 1940 when I just turned 17. I didn't have enough money to go to college, so I used to buy the 2-cent newspaper and read all the ads to look for a job. So sometime around 1940, I did get a job as a soda jerk in a drugstore at Second and Poplar in Philadelphia. I was getting $8 a week, and I was working 48 hours a week, so it wasn't much money. So after about 4 weeks, I got disgusted with the job because I saw other ads in the paper which were paying like $10 a week. So I didn't have enough nerve to tell the druggist that I'm quitting. So one night I come home and I wrote a big letter to the druggist telling him that I'm quitting and I said that the job was slave labor or something to that effect. And another thing that was interesting was while I was working there, the druggist, whom they called Dr. Paul, had a son who was having a lot of trouble in high school with his Latin classes, and I had 4 years of Latin in South Philadelphia High School. So he said, "Could you help my son?" I said, "Yeah, okay." Of course, I expected some remuneration. So he said, "I'll give you $1 for teaching my son." I said, "Well, how long do you expect me to teach him?" He said, "Well, whatever it takes." I said, "Well, I'll only spend an hour." So here I was getting a dollar an hour for teaching them Latin and only getting $8 a week for working 48 hours. But anyhow, that's beside the point. So that was the end of that job. And I'm looking for another job. And I got another job in another place around Second and Poplar in Philadelphia, a little further along Girard Avenue, in a nicer place called Ganskow's, which was a soda fountain place, and you had a short order cook. I didn't even know what short order cook was, but I took that job, and that was $10 a week. So I didn't. Around that time, there was war in Europe, and we were getting prepared for war in the United States, so a lot of jobs were opening up, but you had to apply to the federal jobs. So I filled an application and took a test. And within a couple of weeks, I get a letter back saying that they offered me a job in Washington as an apprentice printer. I said, what the hell is an apprentice printer? And I tell that to my mother. They give me a job for like $1,000 a year as apprentice printer if I go to Washington. He says, you're not going to Washington. I don't care how much they're going to pay you. I don't want you to go to anywhere.
How old were you?
Stay here. I was 17 at the time. So I said, well, I'm applying for other jobs. She says, well, maybe you'll get one of these other jobs. So sure enough, I applied for other jobs, and another letter comes through from the federal government offering me a job as an engineering aide. That was the title of the job. What does it entail? They're going to give me 6 months. They're going to give me training to become a government inspector of radio equipment. So what happens? I get the job, and they give me three months of training and working with electricity at Bach Vocational in South Philadelphia. And subsequent to that, I had another 3 months of training at Drexel Institute and more advanced electrical work and radio work. After which I was assigned to work as a government inspector in Erie, Pennsylvania. So I said, where's Erie? They didn't even know where it was. They said, well, it's at the other end of the state, but we'll give you transportation. Transportation was an upper berth in a train. I've never been on a berth on a train at that point. I didn't even know what the berth was, but I found out. And I took an overnight trip to Erie. So to make a long story short, I spent a year at Erie with about eight other inspectors in a company called Blyder Electric Company, which was making what they called quartz crystal units that was used in those days to control the frequency of radio sets for the Army. So I spent a year there, and during that year, a lot of my friends were being drafted into the military, and I was getting a call to be drafted after about 6 months there. And I told my boss, I'm being drafted. He said, you're not being drafted. I said, what do you mean? He says, well, you have an essential job. As a result of that, we can give you a deferment. What's a deferment? That means you'll be deferred for 3 months from being drafted. I said, okay, it's great. I'm having such a great time in Erie, being 19 years old by then and having a lot of fun. So I was deferred 3 months. And then at the end of 3 months, I got another call that I was being drafted, told that to my boss, and he says, we can give you another 3 months deferred. I said, okay, I'll take it. So I was there about a year, and I got another letter. So I said, this is ridiculous. Everybody's being drafted. I'm one of the few back here, and all these girls are practically attacking me here. By now, I can't handle it. So I'm going into the service.
You went in the service because the ladies were attacking you? Yeah, you had too many ladies in your life?
More or less. I was pretty dumb at that time, you know. So I went into the service, and I was supposed to go into the Army. They examined me, you know, like they normally do. Supposed to go in the Army. But I'd received letters from all my friends who had gone into the service and had been in the Army, because we had been trained by the Army Signal Corps, you know, for radio control and all that kind of stuff. So my friends who were in the Army sent me letters, said, don't come in the Army, stay out of it, because we're climbing telephones to lay wires for communication, all that kind of stuff, and guys are getting killed. It's the worst job to have. Don't go in there, go anywhere else but the Army. So when they're going to assign me to the Army, I say, do I have any choice here? They said, of course you got a choice. What's your problem? I said, well, I'd like to go in the Navy. They said, you won't believe this. They said, if you can pass all the tests, the tests for the Navy. I said, what's the difference between the Army and the Navy? He said, well, we have a more rigid eye test. Uh-oh. So I said to myself, I'm in trouble here, because I was nearsighted and I was wearing glasses and I knew I'd flunked the eye test. So while they were testing this, like I said, it's unbelievable. While they were testing these guys for the eye test, I studied the chart. And when they examined me, I knew what the letters were, and I passed the eye test. Oh. Yeah, that sounds incredible, but that's what happened.
So escape ladies, you cheated on your eye test.
Yeah, so I got into the Navy. That's great. So I got into to escape the Army. I got into the Navy.
But you tried to join the Army to escape ladies.
Right, that's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So I'm in the Navy now, right? So I'm in boot camp. This is August the 28th, 1943. So from August 28th, 1940, we can't do this whole thing. We'll have to resume something.
It's okay.
From August 28th, 1943 to May the 20th, 1946, I was in the Navy. So this was the sequence of my experience in the Navy. I'm in boot camp from August 28th, 1943 to about January of December of 1943, right, okay. At which time I took a test and they said you're gonna be trained by the Commander Eddy program, which trains men to handle radio and radar communication equipment, troubleshooting it, operating it, and so forth. So I said, oh, great, okay. So I said, what does that entail? They said, well, we'll tell you once you get into it. So what happened was, I think I told you this, December of 1943, they assigned me to Wright Junior College in Chicago for one whole month of radio training. And what happened there was I complete that 1 month, and I'm getting sick. I had a throat problem. They called it pharyngitis. So they sent me to the dispensary, infirmary, and I had to stay there like a week. So what happened was, while I'm there a week, my class was already shipped out to Washington for the next part of that radio and radar program. So I said, what do I do now? I said, well, they'll say, well, stay here by yourself for 1 month in Chicago. I said, well, I said to myself, that's great. Chicago was one of the best towns for military personnel. I said, what do I do? He says, well, all you have to do is spend the morning swabbing the deck of the school, areas, and then the rest of the day you have to yourself. You go anywhere you want to go in Chicago. So for the whole month of January 44, that's what I was doing. At the end of January 44, I went out with the next class, which was assigned to another 3 months of training for radio and radar at a college in Stillwater, Oklahoma. Oklahoma A&M, now it's Oklahoma State College, I think it is. So I'm there 3 months. So that's like from February of 44, March to May of 44. I got a lot of training. Huh? So at the end of which time they said, well, since you got this class at Oklahoma, you have really been trained for aviation radio and radar. I said, well, okay, so what does that mean? They said, that means we got to give you 6 months more training. I should have been expert in everything. I said, where's that? They said, that's at the Naval Air Technical Trainers center in Corpus Christi, Texas. So I went to Corpus Christi, Texas. Okay. So at which time, I get a second-class petty officer, fart first class. Now you're asking me, why would they say fart? That's terrible. Well, fart stands for Flying Aviation Radio Technician. Fart. That's the truth. That's the truth. But let me tell you, just as a side issue here, none of us like that designations. So he said, we got to change that. So I don't know how long it took, but eventually it was changed from fart second class to aviation electronic technician mate, first class. I eventually became first class petty officer, which was like a staff sergeant in the Army. So I finished that, okay. And now this is unbelievable too. Now I'm finished, and I'm supposed to go out on a aircraft carrier. So they said, where am I assigned? You're assigned to the Philadelphia Naval Shipyard. Oh, I said, I'm going back to Philadelphia. Yeah, you're going back to there, but you're going in an outgoing unit to be assigned as a AETM first class on the aircraft carrier, the Antietam. I said, that's nice. What do we do on that? Well, are we going out to battle? They said, no, it's a brand new ship. You're going on a shakedown cruise, and then you eventually go to the South Pacific. I said, well, okay. If I had no choice, I have to go. But while I'm in Philadelphia Naval Yard, they say the following, we got the, now hear this, the following men come down to the office, following eight men. And I was one of the eight men.
And why don't you say your name, because we haven't said your name yet.
My name was Joseph Jerry Abrams. Joseph Jerry Abrams. J.J. Abrams. Anyhow, so I'm on this outgoing unit, Navy Shipyard, and they told me to come down to the office. I said, they said, you men have been picked especially to do research work on pilotless aircraft. That's great, because we've had all this training. Where are we going, sir? Willow Grove Naval Air Station. Sir, where's Willow Grove? I didn't even know where Willow Grove is, which is right in the northeast section of Philadelphia, really. You know, because I'm never out of South Philadelphia. So that's where I went from, what was that? From December of 44 until I was discharged in May of 46. I was doing all this research work on pilotless aircraft, which eventually became target drones that we have today. That's as far as we go for the time being, okay?
You want to talk about Bubby?
Okay.
All right, so thanks for talking about that. So yeah, now okay.
Now Bubby,
ask
okay.
You about where you met Bubby and how okay. You met Bubby.
Yeah, right.
So
Bubby, her name is Selma Abrams, whom I eventually married. I met her in Philadelphia when I was still a sailor, while I was still assigned to Willow Grove, that's right. So since I was assigned to Willow Grove, I would come home, even though I had barracks in the Willow Grove Naval Air Station, they allowed me to come home at times. So I'd come home and then I would visit with my friends, and they introduced me to several girls whom I went out with a few times, and I never stuck with them until I met Selma Cooperman in a USO center at the roof of the YMHA at Broad and Pine Streets in Philadelphia. What was she doing on the roof? That she was a hostess with the mostess. I mean, she was a hostess for the men, for the dances that they had there. And I wasn't much of a dancer, and I don't think I was much of a ladies' man either at that time, because I was sitting there watching them all dance. Of course, I went up there to find a nice-looking girl, but I was sitting there, and I'm reading a book, and I'm looking up, you know, overlooking all these girls, and this one girl, Selma, comes over to me, And she says, "Would you like to dance, sailor?" And so I look up and I said, "I think so." You know, she says, "Well, I think you better dance because you're reading that book upside down." Just like that. Yes. That's a true story. So so that's how I met her. So, and within about 9 months, we were married. We were engaged in about 4 or 5 months, and we were married on February 24th,
1946. Wow. So yeah. Within 9 months of meeting.
We were married, yeah.
Comparison to my girlfriend and I, who were with each other for about 9 years.
Well, that's a different generation, right? Everything's different today. In those days, you'd never live with a girl, you know, if you weren't married, yeah. So it was entirely different, yeah. So is that as far as we can go?
That's good.
We'll pick it up again sometime.
Okay, we'll do another one.
Yeah.
Thanks,
Ada. We'll take it off. We'll take it up from there when I can tell you about the children, grandchildren.
There's nothing else you want to say about the war?
The war.
The fun stories?
I don't know. Well, didn't I tell you about Erie?
Any person you want? You like any other person you met there that you?
Well, in Erie, I met a girl. Naturally, I was only 19 years old, and I'm working on this assembly line with about 20 girls around between 17 and 20, and I'm about 19, and we had about 8 other. I was an inspector, you know, as I told you, inspecting these quartz crystal units. See. In those days, a lot of the guys had already been drafted, so we were really very popular, you know, the guys. And I met a girl who was Irish, and I went with her for a long time, and I might have even married her if she hadn't already been engaged to some other guy, which she never told me. The guy was already in the army. So suddenly, before I completed my tour, before I went into the Navy there, she told me she getting married. This guy's out in Kansas in the army. I said, "Well, if that's what you have to do, you have to do it." Said goodbye. But she was Irish, and when I met her, believe it or not, she thought I was Irish. I might have looked Irish, you know, at that time. I could have, I could have looked Irish at that time. But I told her I was Jewish, and she knew it. And that's the only time I went to Catholic church. So I'd never been to a Catholic church before, and so she told me, you know, what they do in a church, and I said, she says, "I'm going to kneel down, you know, at the pew," and she said, "You don't have to do that, Joe. I know you're Jewish, so you don't have to do that." It was an interesting experience. I only went in there once with her, but I had a lot of fun there because I might have told you this too. At that time, I didn't have any car. But one of the engineers there who worked with me was going into the service, and he had a model 1931 Model A Ford. And he said, "Joe, I got to get rid of this car. Will you take it from me? Will you buy it from me?" I said, "I'm making $20 a week. How can I afford a car?" He said, "I'll give you this car for $15. I said, "Is it in running condition?" He says, "Yeah, the tires aren't too good. You know, those days we had inner tubes in the tires." He said, I can tell you that the inner tubes in all these tires have about 20 patches on them." He said, "But," I said, "is the car running? Is it okay?" He said, "Oh, yeah, I'll let you try it out." I said, "I can't try it out. I never drove a car. I don't have a license." He says, "Well, make up your mind." So I had another friend, 9 years older than me, who had a similar car, and it was a very good mechanic. He said, "Joe, take that car. It's a buy. I'll teach you how to drive." That's exactly what happened. He taught me how to drive, and I'm driving around with my girlfriend in this car. We had a great time for the year. I spent exactly a year there, and I met this girl about 4 months after I was there, so I knew her for about 8 months anyhow. But so we had a lot of fun driving around, and a lot of flat tires. I always had to go into gas stations, get the flats, put another patch on the inner tube, and all that kind of stuff. Oh, yeah, another interesting thing was, since I didn't have a driver's license, I had to get a driver's license. So in Erie, the state troopers take you through the streets for the driver's test. Okay, so The first time I take the test, he tells me, drive through the streets, drive around these streets. In those days, practically no traffic. This is like 1942 to 1943, before I went in the Navy. So I take the test. I'm only telling you this because it was funny. I take the test and there was snow on the ground. So I get through all the streets and I'm coming back to park the car. He says, park the car right in back of my car, son, just like that. I says, okay, sir. So I drive up to the back of his car. And there's snow on the ground, so I slide right into his back car. He says, "Well, son, you know you didn't pass the test." I said, "I guess I did." I guess I did. That's the end of that. Okay, it's not the end of the driver's test yet. He said, "Come back in 30 days." So I'm driving all over the city, of course, there's practically no traffic with my girlfriend or without my girlfriend, and I come back. I take the second test. Okay, I shouldn't have any trouble. I did it before. I'm not going to slide. There's no snow on the ground. So I pull out. He says, "You flunk." I said, "What do you mean? I just pulled." He says, "You did not give the signal that you're pulling out." Mm-hmm. See, in those days, there was no turn signals. You're supposed to put your arm out like that. So you know, I didn't put my arm out. He said, "Come back in 30 days. Well, came back in 30 days. And of course, by that time, I passed the test.
Huh.
So that took care of the incident with the car. And then I got through these deferments that I told you about, and I got into the Navy.
And then you went to a Bears game, didn't you?
While I was there, yeah. I'm glad you brought that up. I'm surprised you remember that. Around January of 40... 43, yeah, around January of 43, the Bears were playing the Packers in, I think, a championship game. So I asked my friends there. I had a lot of boyfriends, you know, who could have gone with me. Nobody wanted to spend the money to get on the train and go to from Erie, Pennsylvania, to Chicago, Illinois. And I sat on a chair. I didn't get any berth. And it was like overnight trip, I guess. I went to the Bears game, and that's the time when I got off the train, and it was early in the morning, and I asked the guy, "Where can I have breakfast?" And he says, "Go to the Palmer House." I didn't know what the Palmer House was, with this beautiful place here. So I went into the Palmer House, and I remember some dumb things, distinct things that always happened to me. And I went, and they had a big, beautiful counter there for breakfast. I ordered bacon and eggs, and I get the bacon and eggs, and then they give me the toast. And I'm looking at the toast. I said, "Gee, this looks a little different." They had cut the crust off the bread. See? Huh. So it's certain things you remember. So I remember that. And then I went out to the football game, and it was a great football game.
Do you remember the stadium?
Yeah, it was the Soldiers Field. Huh. Soldiers Field, yeah, The quarterback was a Jewish guy, Sid Luckman, who I think eventually got into the Hall of Fame. So I never forgot his name. And eventually, he came to Philadelphia. He became an advisor to the Eagles, I think, many years later. Yeah, and then the quarterback for the Packers was Cecil Isbell, also who eventually became a great football player, and the. Wide receiver. In those days, they didn't call them wide receivers. I think they just called them, I don't know, maybe just maybe receivers or something. But he was catching a lot of balls. And who the heck was he? I forget his name.
Remember who won?
Yeah, the Bears won that game. Okay. Bears won that, definitely, yeah. So that took care of that. Now, where are we now?
43? Is that when you would go to the Aragon and Trianon?
Oh, yeah. There you go. See, you reminded me. It's a good thing I have a trouble remembering. Oh, yeah. Well, I'm in Chicago. It was, like I said, was considered the best town for military personnel. And it was, because a lot of things were free. The the shows. It wasn't Broadway. What was it called in Chicago? Where you saw all the legitimate shows? Was Michigan Avenue where you saw legitimate shows?
Could be.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
The Loop, Magnificent Mile.
Theater district.
Yeah, somewhere it was in a Loop, definitely. But anyhow, so I saw Oklahoma. I think they put me in the front row with a lot of other military personnel. Free. Everything was free. Another thing that stands out was that. I had just come out of boot camp, and in boot camp, they issue your clothes untailored, you know, so a lot of it doesn't fit right. So in Chicago, where everything was free, you go into, a lot of the hotels were taken over by military, and they had seamstresses there, women who would tailor your clothes for you free. So after I went in there, they gave me bell-bottom trousers and made my blouse fit just perfectly. I come out of there like a new man. But all the sailors were doing that, you know. So that's one thing I remember there.
And when did you go to the Aragon?
Oh, yeah. And then, of course, guys were telling me, go to these two ballrooms. They have great dancers here. You might meet girls there. Why? I went there, but I didn't meet anybody there. But I loved, I enjoyed listening to the great swing bands of those days. I think Woody Herman was at one of them, who was a famous band leader, and there was another guy there, Trianon and the Aragon. But the Trianon was on the south side, so I remember getting off the subway, and I didn't realize that it was the whole neighborhood was black. I'm walking along the streets here. I figured I'd walk, you know, just to see how the neighborhood was, and I didn't see any white person where I was walking in that area. So I figured I'd better go back into the subway and come back up north, you know.
And you'd go to the Aragon?
And then I went to the Aragon, yeah. Aragon.
We still go there today.
Yeah. But what do they have here?
Now it's a lot of concerts, rock bands.
Oh, well, there you go. So it's the same type of thing, yeah. They were great places. Very popular with the soldiers and sailors, you know, and of course Chicago always had a lot of sailors. Goodbye, since you had Navy Pier, you know.
All right, so, well, I guess we'll end here.
Yeah, let's end here. It's a good time.
All right, Dana, thank you so much.
Okay. Yes,
all right. Take your hand. Thanks.
Recording some life stories. Yeah.
Wow. Nice. Wow. Wow.
StoryCorps.
Did you do the South Philadelphia store selling the potatoes from the